Welcome to The Gauge, a new podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group, bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations happening in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and plan to bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets. As an important disclaimer, the views shared during this podcast are for informational purposes only and do not constitute and should not be construed or relied upon as legal, business, investment or tax advice.
Welcome to another episode of The Gauge. I'm delighted to have Colin Jones with me here from Outerlands. Colin and I met in the context of Hub 71, an Abu Dhabi incubator program that Green Gauge was a part of, and Colin was a guest to speak to the member companies. Colin, delighted to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Sean. It's good to see you again.
Likewise. And great to have you. I guess you're in the US today.
I'm in the US. It's outside of Chicago in South Bend, Indiana, which I will explain at some point. It's in the 20s and snowing. And I think about Abu Dhabi frequently.
I can imagine. As is regular, rather than me give a summary, it's great to hear from you, a bit of an introduction on who you are. Obviously, I have great interest in what you're doing, but maybe if you could share with our listeners a bit of background on Outerlands and yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I guess most interestingly, I was a finance professor minding my own business for over a decade, most recently at the University of Notre Dame, which is why I'm still in South Bend, Indiana. And I had been passionate about digital assets for a long time, since 2013. And I can tell that story of how I got into it. But I think, for lack of a better word, got bored of academia around 2021 and was looking for a new challenge and wanted to follow my passion for digital assets. I'm not a programmer, I'm not a coder. And so how can I participate in furthering decentralization and all that Web3 is trying to usher into the world? And the opportunity to join a blockchain development company called Horizon Labs popped up. And so I built the investments team at Horizon Labs from the ground up, and we did all manner of things from tokenomics advisory to managing the balance sheet to writing investments into other managers. And all the while, we're doing our own research and my background on systematic investing and thinking, could we port this over to the landscape of digital assets? And lo and behold, we hit on some very compelling research and decided to spin out from that company with their support in the summer of 2023 as Outerlands Capital. Outerlands Capital specializes in building, you know, high quality portfolios of liquid digital assets and trying to bring those to an institutional audience, which I think is going to be the future for digital assets. And everybody will eventually see that this isn't just goofballery, but that there's true value being built in the Web3 space and that it should be part of everybody's portfolio. And that value will accrue to the tokens, and those tokens need to be held if an investor wants to participate in the value creation that we believe is going to come in a very large way.
Fantastic. And obviously, I agree with those lot of macro headwinds, perhaps in your favor. You mentioned 2013 was your first entrance. That's a lot of longevity in the digital assets industry.
Yes, I certainly wasn't the earliest, but I had a student walk into my office in the fall of 2013 and say, "Have you ever heard of Bitcoin?" And I can still see his face. I remember the conversation very well. I was just fascinated by the technology. I'd never heard of it. We pulled up the price chart. It was psychotic, up and down, all over the place, very volatile. And I read the white paper and, as we like to say, went down the rabbit hole on Bitcoin and saw how powerful the concept was of a decentralized store and exchange of value. And then Ethereum came out a few years later, and that was like my head exploded. Oh my gosh, programmable money. This is going to enable all sorts of things. So I started teaching classes on it in 2016, 2017 timeframe. And then 2021 rolled around. This was, the labor market was really tight. Digital assets were at a local peak. And my interest in jumping into the space was also very high. It was difficult to leave academia. I love a lot of things about it. At the margin, it was great. I needed to find a new challenge and a new adventure. And I certainly found that in digital assets. And living through the last 3 years doing this, it's been a rocky road and lots of bumps and bruises. But very happy with where we find ourselves today and very happy with what we've built at Outerlands and the ecosystem that we're participating in.
What were some of the students like that took those classes?
It's a really good group. So I was running a program of sort of an honors program for the highest potential students in the finance major. And I got to design a lot of bespoke courses that we would offer. And I was so passionate about this. And I had a PhD student in the program at the time who went on to found Horizon Labs, which is the company that I ended up joining. And he was very passionate about it. And we said, let's offer a course on digital assets. And it was just Bitcoin, Ethereum, and some of the derivatives at the time. So it was very early. And some of the students were incredibly interested. And some of the students have gone on to have very successful careers in the crypto space, actually. But by and large, most of them were, this is goofball, magic internet money. What are we talking about here? And failed to see the potential. In fact, my co-teacher, Rob, he gave Bitcoin away to every student in the class the first day. And they had to get a wallet and get the whole thing. And I should go back and look at what the value was, but it's certainly a lot higher today than it was in 2016. It's hard to see the future. We all struggle with that.
I think perhaps because of your academic background, one of the things that I noted about Adeline's was your emphasis on research. I can imagine over the years you've done quite a few pieces that are special to you. Would you mind summarizing perhaps just as a vignette, one or two that you think really are something different and that you're proud of?
Yeah, happy to. We love research almost to a fault. We love getting in the data and looking at the space. It's a fascinating space. I guess at a high level, most people, most allocators, most investors dismiss crypto as just animal coins, meme coins, and they just throw away the whole asset class. But therein lies the opportunity, because what they're doing is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And what's actually happening at the core is an incredibly powerful decentralization and this Web3 movement of giving control and ownership of virtual assets and exchange of those assets to the people that are participating in the network and the people that ultimately own those assets, which is a very revolutionary idea. I don't think everybody quite appreciates that there are enough very high quality founders and entrepreneurs in the space building projects that you can participate in a very liquid way by owning the token. Historically, investing in early stage technology projects required you to go via a venture manager, and that you're talking about a 10-year locked vehicle, and getting access to that by itself is difficult. Getting access to the top decile manager is very difficult. This was a challenging place to invest, and then you're locked up and you're hoping that things pan out. This is the first time I've ever seen that you can invest in early stage technology projects with the benefit of liquid portfolio construction. I can go in and out of a project just the same way I can public equity, but these are early stage technology companies that display all the same power law dynamics where a few outliers are going to drive most of the returns to the portfolio, but I don't have to be in those projects all the time as I would as a venture manager. I can move in, I can move out. And that means that, okay, there might be something here about which token should I own any given month or any given quarter. And can I monitor any metrics like value metrics or quality metrics, the things I would do in equity markets? Can I do that in these liquid tokens? And so we set out looking at very basic things like diversification. So I think one of our most well-read pieces on our website that we put out a couple of years ago was on diversification in digital assets. Now, it sounds ridiculous to anybody familiar with finance that diversification would be a controversial topic. I think generally that diversification is a pretty good idea. And yet that seems to be very controversial in digital assets. What I encountered when I came into the space was a lot of very high conviction, concentrated managers, really passionate about a single ecosystem and some of the peripheral projects there. Or they're really into Bitcoin, or really into Ethereum, or really into Solana. And if you look at this, there's thousands and thousands of tokens that you can buy. I'm not saying you want to own all of those, but maybe I want to own 30 or 40 of those. And let's go into the data and see if that's actually a beneficial thing to do. And lo and behold, we did the research. Diversification works in crypto the same way it works in every other asset class. It shouldn't surprise anybody, but I think we were one of the first firms to come out and say that out loud, that most investors should be more diversified in the digital asset space. Again, not controversial in any other asset class, but was relatively novel in digital assets. And then we went on to say, are there metrics we can look at that will help us determine where the value lies within this space and where the high quality projects are? There is not a Bloomberg equivalent in crypto. There's not a FactSet or a CapIQ yet. There's a lot of firms trying to build that, a lot of good firms that we're very friendly with. So getting a complete scrubbed data set of on-chain fundamentals, so who's using it, how often are they using it, what are they using it for, are they paying fees, what's the size of those fees, what's the velocity and impact of these transactions, that was not easily available. So we spent a lot of time building out our data warehouse across 100 plus chains, across 24 different variables, and scrubbing that, which would allow us to build the variables to then go and say, what does value look like in a digital asset context? What does quality look like in a digital asset context? Let's build out these factor models and get our base rates in line so that we can anticipate with a very unbiased data-driven lens what the highest quality portfolio will be in a diversified way on a go-forward basis. And we put out some research on that as well, and that got some traction. Our other most well-received piece was the nascent markets piece, which is a history of early markets. And people look at digital assets and they say, this is just chaos. There's scams and there's meme coins, and it's not a lasting thing. But if you go back and look at early equity markets or early venture capital markets or early emerging equity markets, and we do this in the piece, there's a lot of chaos around all of these markets as they develop and norms start to form and regulations come in and add some guardrails to the whole thing. So this is a brand new asset class and people are figuring this out as we go. And of course that attracts all the charlatans and scammers and vaporware that you'd expect, but that's exactly the opportunity that because that exists, then the opportunity for a high quality manager to come in and say, we can build a better telescope for navigating these assets and picking and choosing the best assets and putting them together in a nice diversified package as a portfolio, that's the opportunity to us. And that's what we're doing and that's what we excel in. So, and all the research that we do supports that. And we try to share a lot of that publicly for the betterment of anybody who's participating in digital assets.
Fantastic. And just for our listeners, if you could maybe highlight the website address so they can find the reports.
Sure. Outerlands, OUTERLANDS.io. We have a lot of research on there, and we're going to come out with more pieces on a go forward. So.
Excellent. One of the things GreenGage does is we facilitate loans against crypto. Similarly, that's a nascent market, and we've had to look historically at the likes of lending against gold or securities as proxies. It's interesting to see the historic analysis and where it fits and where it deviates. I'd love to hear a little bit more about the portfolio construction of your clients. Generally, if you have these kind of insights, what percentages of your client portfolios are in digital assets? Is this the 5% mark when you speak about diversification? Are you looking at the broader portfolio theory as well?
Absolutely. So what we're trying to build at Outerlands are portfolios that can be plugged into a much more diverse institutional portfolio. And we're trying to bring the best digital assets to those portfolios. So rather than just adding Bitcoin's amazing, but there's all this other stuff happening and that stuff's more difficult to navigate. So can we go out and get the highest quality assets from the rest of crypto and package that up as a diversified portfolio and give that to investors? And I would say by and large, most allocators have zero exposure to digital assets. So all Outerlands does is digital assets, but the investors that we're talking to are trying to get off of zero. They know that this is a very dynamic asset class. There's not an asset class as explosive, potentially, I mean that in the best way, explosive on the upside as digital assets has been and will continue to be. And we have a piece on digital assets sitting inside of a large institutional portfolio. It's going to be uncorrelated. It has been uncorrelated. There are periods where there is high correlation, but by and large, that's the exception, not the norm. And generally, technology trends should be uncorrelated with larger macro moves. And so despite digital assets investors often getting a little rambunctious and excited around macro announcements, I think long run, these are uncorrelated themes. So it really deserves a spot in every institutional portfolio and every personal investor's portfolio, but that should be sized correctly. So we don't go out and say that this should be half of your portfolio. That would be a little bit aggressive, but anywhere from 1% to 5% is a number that makes a lot of sense. And our portfolio piece that we put on our website makes the argument that it's not surprising when you look at an asset class that has 10x'd in the last 5 years, that's going to improve your Sharpe ratio. And in fact, the analysis says you should just add a whole lot of crypto to your portfolio because it's 10x'd in the last 5 years. And so if I'm just looking at historical analysis, obviously you want something that's 10x'd. So it's not surprising that your Sharpe ratio historically goes up if you add digital assets. The most compelling thing though is that trend is just getting started. At least that's our belief. And we're going to see more of that, and that these big explosive dynamic trends and digital assets are just getting going and deserve a place in an institutional portfolio. It's going to be volatile. It's going to be a bumpy ride. People are still figuring this out, as I said, and that needs to be sized appropriately. 1-2% is a number I think that makes a lot of sense for most investors.
It's interesting to see, and this is more kind of a side assessment, but the portfolio construction of fixed income managers vis-a-vis MicroStrategy and their instruments that they almost have to hold to match their peer group. You're obviously doing something very different.
Yeah, most of our strategies are investing in the tokens directly.
And within the tokens, one of the things we discussed was the role of governance tokens, which you're also considering in the mix. Could you talk to that, how they fit and why you think they're of interest?
Yeah, we have a research piece on our website. It's a really interesting topic. Governance obviously is important. We really value the right to vote. People fight, have revolutions to get the right to vote, to have a voice, to have your voice heard. In the virtual world, a governance token in the presence of decentralized autonomous organizations, DAOs, and any other governance functions or formats that might exist in an online world, these should be valuable. They've been misused. A lot of tokens probably exist that shouldn't exist. And so in our research, we really want to look at governance tokens aren't inherently bad. I think they're inherently good, but they need to be structured well to have reliability so that you can rely on it and some sort of economic control. And so when those things are present, governance tokens can be very valuable, but quite often they are not present. So when we're looking at our investment universe, we're looking at governance tokens as a subset of that, we really try to make sure that these are well structured, and we get into the white papers and the tokenomics and try to make sure that there's something there that we can fall back on, as opposed to a token associated with a project that's cool, which is often the case. And then they call it a governance token and they get to vote on something completely irrelevant to the larger mission in the worst examples. And we try to avoid those and to concentrate on ones that have, you know, reliability and control in the mix.
A fairly strong case for active asset management in this asset class.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And because in most other asset classes, there's this huge move to passive and maybe passive plus or some sort of smart beta. And I'm with you on most of other asset classes, that makes a lot of sense. But in this space, if you just indexed across, let's just say the top 100 by size, you end up with a lot of assets I really don't believe in. And we started researching this, should you have an index? Should it be market cap weighted? Should it be equal weighted? In fact, we released an index at the end of last year with one of our data partners, Artemis, that we're calling the Fundamental Index. And it's looking at on-chain fundamentals. Are people using the protocol? Are they using it a lot? And are they valuing it by paying for it? And so if we use those to determine the weights of the index, you get a very different set of weights than you would in a market cap weighted index for digital assets. And it's very compelling. And we're very proud of that index. But if you did a simple buy them all index, there's a lot of narrative, there's a lot of hype, there's a lot of projects I think will eventually go to zero, and there's a lot of meme coins. And we can have a whole discussion about meme coins, but we don't invest in meme coins. We're trying to be technology investors that are buying technology assets. I don't want to own most of those top 100, so I don't want my investors to own most of those top 100. And we go in and we cherry pick the best of the best, or the tokens that we think present the best, highest risk-adjusted returns in the portfolio. We are not to a place of passive investing in this space yet, unless you're doing something like our fundamental index, which is a much more active approach driven by actual usage in the underlying technology and not by hype and expectations and narratives.
Very clear. I have to ask, as you're a fellow American, but actually on the ground, this has been called the first crypto election, and there's been big movements like Stand With Crypto in the US that I think might have tipped the balance in one or two regional states. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the macro implications for the incoming administration. We hear a lot of kind of crypto-friendly people in the mix. What's the mood on the ground?
The mood on the ground in our space for digital assets is incredibly optimistic. So we'll just hold aside all other politics. But I think for crypto, it has been under attack in the U.S. That's very well known. It was not a good couple of years for crypto in the wake of FTX all the way through, but even say the end of 23. It's been getting better, but still, it's an industry that's been under attack. Stand With Crypto did a lot. And they really had a big impact on this election, and it's very impressive. Their impact was felt. And it's going to be an entirely new era for crypto in the U.S. And Donald Trump has come out and said he wants the U.S. to be the home for digital assets. Paul Atkins is the new SEC chair, very aligned with some of the missions that Web3 is trying to do. So it feels very different here in this space, in this industry, than it did even 3 months ago. That's all very exciting. And I think it was one of the big four firms. They did a poll and they were asking institutional investors, what's your hesitation with digital assets? And the number one reason was regulatory uncertainty. That's now been alleviated. My personal experiences are lining up. That might have been holding back a lot of institutional allocators, and that there's a lot more, they're being much more receptive conversations about digital assets now than they were a year. So I think that's very good, because in order for Web3 to be integrated into our society, we're going to need the large capital pockets to hold these assets. And that's going to help usher in the era of Web3 and decentralization and create a full ecosystem that'll allow builders to build technology that people will use and generate this Web3 future that I think we all believe in. But that was difficult in a very uncertain regulatory environment.
A strong foundation could be interesting to build upon. I've really enjoyed the discussion, Alan. If you'd like to give any closing comments before we wrap up, any final insights for our audience?
I would thank you for having me, and I'm excited to see what GreenGage is going to do. It's a very interesting project, but I guess I would just encourage everybody to be open-minded and to think about Web3 and decentralization and what that can do for society and for people, not just in developed economies like ours, but across the globe. There's a very powerful force there to allow individuals to hold their own value. And that's what got me very interested in 2013 and maintains my interest today, is helping everybody take control of their own assets, their own value that they're generating, and their data and their identities and all the things that we've outsourced to intermediaries can now be owned by individuals and by the network. That's a very powerful concept and at least deserves consideration by anybody listening, but that there's something more powerful there that needs to be considered.
Amazing. I would have very much enjoyed taking your class if I had access to it back in the day. But thank you very much, Colin, for your time. Much appreciated.
Yeah. Thank you, Sean.